Joseph Barton, the medical researcher who's the husband in this unhappy family, goes to an alienist, a psychiatrist of the day, to ask for advice about what is wrong with his wife, or what he perceives to be wrong with his wife. As we were just discussing, the book definitely falls into the male point of view about these events and the female point of view about these events. And the male goes and consults with a male psychiatrist, and the female goes and consults with a female spiritualist, and they both hear what they are expecting to hear. And so he goes to Dr. Douglas Miles. Joseph Barton goes to Dr. Douglas Miles to ask for help. And this is the help he receives from the good doctor, by request. Barton, yes, I would like to hear that, but I had the most remarkable experience last evening, and I desire another's ear to make it real. I was dining as a guest of a fellow of the Royal Astronomical Society. We dined at the Society's house, in a hall lit with moving stars on its ceiling. Barton, the Society employs such a Da Vinci in its kitchen that I can scarcely express my wonder at his artistry. Each course, you see, represented a stage of human knowledge of the universe. Soup. Be patient with me, I'm no astronomer. Soup was the universe as known to Aristotle. Concentric rings of a tomato and pepper cream laid over a black potage, and in the center sat the Earth, depicted by a flat, round toast, colored blue, and supporting a very convincing map of Greece in a paste of sparrowgrass. On each of those concentric circles, a floating item, a disc of tomato for Mars, a lozenge of parsnip for Venus, a truffle of moon, all of it speckled with a golden dust of stars, gold flake, in fact, excellent for the blood. Joseph felt himself heavy in his chair, and he found Dr. Miles' voice soothing. Next, said the doctor, the Persians, maybe the Hindus, I cannot recall, perhaps Chinamen. They believed the earth was a single river-veined mountain balanced in the upturned jaws of a viper, and the sun, moon, and stars were supported, respectively, on the back of a turtle, on the upturned wings of an eagle, and in a basket held in the snout of a boar. Barton, it was a performance unequaled in my experience. Turtles, their shells removed and replaced with thin slices of beef, sculpted as shell, under a bright yellow melon stuffed with a fiery pulp of oranges and radishes. The bird was enormous, a goose of such unprecedented mass, and with its roast wings extended up and arched like this, supported by piles of quail's eggs beneath, and balancing between the tips of its wings the moon, a surface of scalloped potatoes, seas of beans, volcanoes pouring forth molten cheese, forcefully extruded by some engine hidden beneath the table. And that Hindu boar, may Vishnu bless him, as large as you this fellow was, but a sight more succulent, and in his jaws a basket woven of noodles, holding a mountain of stars, the quail yolks floating in blanc mange. Yes, I recall, the viper in the mountain. Each of us had a jellied eel, coiled, mind you, jaws pried open, grasping in its maw a mountain of pork, streaming with a gravy somehow dyed blue for the rivers, you see. And now the pudding. I'm omitting a few courses, you know. I cannot say I recall the cosmologies of all those intertwined fish, the cheese carved as Copernicus's comets or some such. I have a booklet here somewhere explaining each dish. But at pudding, Barton, we arrived at last at the modern, scientific, and complete understanding of our universe. Five kitchen boys wheeled the display to us on a platform nearly as large as the table itself. The man was such a master. It would have been the easiest matter in the world to make 8 orbs of chocolate and then ice them in the same sugar paste with slightly different colors. But no, he could not bear such pedestrian work. No, all 8 planets orbited a lemon-curved sun, each planet in turn surrounded by its appropriate satellites. The centerpiece for sheer spectacle was the Saturn, circled around with boiled sweets of every color pressed into floating rings the size of a Brahms wheel. Jupiter, the Jovian pudding. Apparently, Jupiter's orange and has an enormous red stain on it, though whether that stain is made of the sweetest currant and raspberry preserve, I suppose only our creator will ever know. The icy poles of Earth, meringue of vanilla. Venus, American oranges and beet sugar encased in a lemon cream and Genoa sponge. Joseph now wished Miles' reminiscence might flow indefinitely on, freeing him from any thought of his own. He could have sat there until the sun fled and returned, gazed through the rubber plants at Cavendish Square beyond, and absorbed at second hand the rivers of port, the forests of cigars, the conversation of the great scientific men gathered for an untroubled and all-male feast. Far too soon, though, with a handful of carved asteroidal nuts, the doctor came to the end of his recited joy, and he insisted instead upon hearing of Joseph's misery. She set the room ablaze. Are you quite certain? So the hysteria has worsened, there can be no doubt. Derangement rooted in morbid fear of conjugal duty, cause irrelevant. You have attempted in your manner to exert your will over her, and she has resisted. She's determined to let herself go. She's chosen hysteria, and with that surrender of character, she's exposed your home to a grave infection. The child, you see, represents your wife's failures. Thus, her deranged self hates it and would, if her better nature's not restored, lash out at it. None of this is terribly uncommon, Barton, in women of a certain class and constitution. Medical science proves every day what has been wisdom since man's expulsion. They are all quite mad, to a greater or lesser degree, some of the time. They're ruled by the moon, you see, as are tides. They're tidal creatures, sea goddesses. We love them for it, but they're prone to the same raging storms as the oceans. It's no wonder that the word sea is, without exception, a feminine noun in every single language that still wisely assigns gender to objects. The same Italian translator said, I don't know what to do because it's not feminine in Italian. He said, it will make no sense if I say, il mare is, without exception, a feminine noun in every single language. I said, you're paid to translate, not to ask stupid questions. All right, a little bit more. She consulted a medium, did she? Of course. The whimsies of spiritism boast their adherents in all ranks, including many eminent men who simply ought to know better. But credulity is one pox medicine is quite unable to eradicate. With women, the appeal of occult practices is quite deeply seated. I've looked into all these visions and visitations they so cherish, the vomiting ectoplasmic fabric, the talking tables, the automatic writing. It is womanly at its very essence, you see, and quite to the point in your own sorry case. At the root of all this stuff festers an essentially sexual fear, the fear of transformation, or the desire for transformation accompanied by a fear of that desire. Examine, sir, the myth of lycanthropy, the monthly metamorphosis of man into wolf. Why does this frighten? Because there are creatures who, in reality, are unwillingly and horribly transformed monthly, with results sanguineous, painful, disorienting, a monthly eradication of character. And just as women fear this regular change, so do men in their souls fear being in any way like them. Hence, lycanthropy. Vampirism? Every carefully investigated case has turned out to be a madman, filing his teeth and attacking women to absorb their blood in order to become like them. You are a scientist. I can recommend some texts. We're all circling the same truths, sir. Your wife fears her own wish to be transformed into a man. You frighten her because you represent that hidden wish in the flesh, and the spirits she believes haunt her, I wager you suffer. The specters are attempting to frighten her away from her deepest desire because her better self knows that this desire is corrupt. The specters are there at her bidding because she wishes to be frightened back to her proper place by an unquestionable authority, a role I begged you to play, sir, but which you abdicated to your lasting detriment and hers. As again, I was saying, very autobiographical work, touching on some of my favorite themes.